It may be International Buy a Priest a Beer Day, according to the internet, but my next guest and I prefer the tradition of Wine Wednesday that we've established. Don't you reckon, Glenn the Wine Guy?
Yeah, me too. And look, I've been trying to launch Take a Wine Guy out to lunch week, and it just hasn't happened.
Oh,
for
what?
Years now. No.
Ah.
No takers.
No, I think that would be a great idea because you'd get all sorts of expert commentary and maybe some specials.
Well, at least I'd bring a bottle of wine along.
Exactly. Oh, well, keep at it, keep at it. You've been studying up on SA's wine history, I hear.
I sure have, Jenny. Remember, for those all of your listeners, a couple of weeks back, we were saying how South Australia is responsible for probably close to half of the national production every year.
Yeah.
And we're also famous, of course, for all our regions and the oldest vines in the country. So I thought it might be fascinating to sort of take a wander back down memory lane there and remind people we boast some of the oldest vines in the world here. So the vulnerable old vines that are found in South Australia's Barossa and McLaren and Clare and so on, that's through their isolation, actually survived the great phylloxera plagues that wiped out the vines of North America and Europe and Australia's eastern vineyards too. So luckily, we had quarantine restrictions that were introduced that actually saved South Australia's vines from phylloxera, and that ensured that our state retained its grape-growing status. That's probably how we got here today.
Well, there you go. And who was the first person to bring grapes to South Australia?
Well, this is what I wanted to rave on about, and I'm happy to sort of quote that I found some info from Wine Australia and also Wiki Winopedia. The earliest recorded evidence of vine planting in South Australia was 1836 by a settler named John Barton Hack, and that was in Chichester Gardens in North Adelaide. And then in 1838, apparently George Stevenson planted a vineyard in Adelaide, and he may have been producing wine as early as 1841, while John Raynell planted a vineyard with about 500 cuttings he got from Tasmania in 1841, and he made wine in about 1843. So that would explain the naming of Ranilla, you see.
Aha. Uh-huh. I didn't realise Tasmania beat us to it.
We just borrowed a few, I suppose, and see if they'd grow here. But funnily enough, following the spread of urban development, Mr. Hack's vines were pulled up and replanted in a vineyard at Achunga Springs near Mount Barker. So in 1843, he sent a case of wine made from his vineyard to Queen Victoria, would you believe? And that's, apparently that's the first Australian wine to reach the Queen. Now, I imagine this would have had to have been a fortified or port style to make the distance. Of course, I once made a wine that didn't even last till lunchtime, but that's a different story.
Have now, we gotten a lot better in recent years in terms of the longevity of wine?
Oh, have we ever? Have we ever? And look, here's a fascinating thing. Some of your listeners will remember back in 1986, the Commonwealth Government implemented a vine pool scheme to restore stability to Australian viticulture, and that's where grape growers are actually offered money in exchange for ripping their vines out.
That's devastating.
Had that continued, all the old vines would have gone. So it was guys like the local champion, Peter Lehman, was one of the winemakers who stood up for the growers. And then when that happened in the 80s, and guys like Robert O'Callaghan, who went on to do, he formed Rockford, and the late Carl Linder, Charlie Melton, Neil and Lorraine Ashmead from Elderton, they all had better things to do than pull their vines out. So with families like that, you know, the Schultz family went on to do Turkey Flat out of that, and the Schraffle family launched Bethany. So, and the cousins, Rick and Grant Bird's got their brands going too. But I can hear your listeners saying, but who was this John Barton Hack fellow?
Yeah, tell us more about the original dude.
Well, I reckon our wine industry could have started by sheer fluke, Jenny. Look, Mr. Barton Hack was born in England to his son of a banker, and his wife was a writer, Maria Hack, and sister of the poet Bernard Barton. So he was educated in Southgate in Middlesex, and then he went on to the leather trade and built up a business in Sussex. So the weird thing is, he actually had an illness which affected his lungs, and he was advised by his doctor to move to a warmer climate. So how good's that? So while he was in Portsmouth, he met the captain of the Buffalo, which was on its way to South Australia, and he headed down here. How funny is that?
Ah, so because of his health, we are maybe the wine capital of the world.
All thanks to that, yeah. And John Raynell, he was the other chap. So he was an English-born immigrant who came out to South Australia first as a wheat farmer, then a sheep and cattle breeder, and then became a winemaker. So he was from Ilfracombe, from a Devonshire farming family. He arrived in South Australia in October 1838, they tell me, and established his property about 20k south of Adelaide, and that became known as McLaren Vale.
Aha.
So there you go. So
there you
we've
go.
Got here, I just made a short list of the oldest vines still here. So if people are driving around looking, they're going to stumble across these and probably have a look. I think Seven Hills Winery in the Clare Valley would have to be our oldest winery. But Oliver's Taranga Vines down south there, if you're listening, Karina Wright, 1841, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think your oldest vine's down there, 1841, and Penfold's McGill Estate, 1844. I think Orlando's still got some vines up there from 1847. My mate Scotty works up there, and you should see it at vintage time. There's just trucks of grapes everywhere.
Oh, I'm fat.
Yolumba in 1849, I think their first vines went down. So Yolumba is Australia's oldest family-owned winery. Stephen and Prue Henschke up there at Eden Valley are probably a close second, because their relish from Celsia made their first wine in Cainton in about 1868.
Wow, so much history.
I know. It's like I'm in the wine TARDIS this morning, Jenny.
Glenn Malik is with us, Director of Wine Pro. Do you reckon wine that comes from really old vines tastes distinctly different?
What an excellent question. The answer to that, first and foremost, is if you've looked after them, yes. So the folks out in viticulture land will tell you, you know, if you've looked after your vines, prune them accordingly, whether you water them a little or a lot, depending on what they need, it all becomes a bit about how deep those roots go down. So you can imagine once roots get down a metre or more, like those Riesling grapes up vines up in Eden Valley there, the minerality that comes out of that is superb. So, and their ability to weather all sorts of conditions, because they've seen a lot more than you and me, Jenny. So the answer is yes, if you look after them and they're low yielding, they won't be commercially viable because they don't crop at a big enough tonnage per acre. But there's some Grenache and Shiraz up in the Barossa, for example, where they might get a ton per acre if they're lucky, like the guys at Pinot Watt off their old vines. But geez, they make some gorgeous wine. They make maybe 2 or 3 barrels a year if you're lucky. So the answer is yes, if you look after them, they will produce.
If these vines could talk.
I know. Although some of them might.
They sort of do, don't they, in their wine?
They do. They tell us what's going on.
Yeah. Now, the ridiculous talk topic today, carrying on from the Brekkie Show, is where have you got your head stuck? Can you throw in your 2 cents?
Sure. Look, you can imagine a guy like me, I've had my moments. I was motorcycling along one day and got a good bee sting in the side of the temple there and decided to keep riding. I looked in the mirror and thought, no, all right, the bee's gone, I'll be okay. And by the time I got home, yeah, the helmet was a bit hard to get off because I'm swollen up like a bugger. I'm quite highly allergic.
Bloody hell.
To bees, yeah. So riding a yellow motorcycle is probably not good because they think I'm the mothership. but one of my daughters, yes, she got her head stuck in a sack truck once. Sweetheart, if you're listening, I'm sorry, we got you out. But that made Dad's heart rate go up quite a bit.
How does that work? Sure. Head stuck in a sack truck?
Well, she just wanted to see what was on the other side. If she could actually put her head through the bars of the handle there, and she could. But reversing back out proved a bit more tricky.
That's always the way, because kids are always experimenting.
Correct. And she's still so inquisitive. It's in her nature, and I think she'll do well from it.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to have you on the program, Glenn Malika. Thanks for joining us.
Great. Thanks, Jenny.